Welcome to the Harshman Travel Radio Show segment on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Pamela and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Harshman Travel Radio Show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Pam and Ron's success as entrepreneurs has allowed them to pursue their passion in the travel industry. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio Show and learn about Pam and Ron as they discover the joy that comes from being part of the travel industry. You might have a chance of working with them in their business ventures and your travel plan. So listen in and enjoy the journey. Now on to our Building Fortunes Radio Show with Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingles. Let's get started, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. For anybody that might be unfamiliar with my voice, it's still Peter Mingles. We started Building Fortunes Radio a long time ago, and I wanted a voice and microphones and a platform that we owned that we could talk about whatever we want to talk about, and then I needed some guest hosts. So one of the people that I called early on was Pam Harshman. And Pam was actively building home-based businesses at the time. But when I called, the timing was, she said, you know, I don't know if we're going to be doing home-based businesses traditionally anymore, like that MLM stuff. We're kind of moving in a direction of becoming traditional travel agents. And I kind of thought hard about that. And I said, well, you know, the reason why I was thinking about you as far as a guest host is, you know, you're a really nice person. You're super-duper sharp, great on leadership, follow-up, follow-through. You're the perfect person that people can follow. And, well, if you're going to be doing that travel agent stuff, thinking it through a little bit and trying to make a fit, people like to travel in home-based businesses. That's part of their wish list and their goal list and their bucket list. And certainly, you know, we have lots of people that will be listening in, and they're going to need really good travel agents to be able to get this stuff done, because there's deals out there and there's fine print all over the place and you need advice and guidance. So let's start doing the radio shows anyway. And we've been doing this as one of our longest running radio shows on Building Fortunes Radio. They have a great website, harshmantravel.com, harshmantravel.com. And then Pam brings along her husband, Ron. And Ron, as you'll hear, has a different background than Pam had. But one of the most important things that I want you to hear is a little bit about their background first, so you feel comfortable with giving them your hard-earned dollars. And then next, after the commercial break, we're going to come back, and Ron gives us the good news, mostly good news all the time lately, about what's happening in the travel industry. So I think we've kind of, you know, I don't know, the worm has turned. We're on the bright side of this equation after COVID, and I'm kind of looking forward to the good news that Ron's going to be able to share with us on the other side of the commercial break. But first, let's do introductions. Pam, thanks for being here on your own radio show.
She's on her way. She's going to be here in 2 seconds.
Okay.
So glad to be here again, Peter.
No problem. Thanks for being here.
We always look forward to Friday nights and our visits. Anyway, a little bit about my background is I started my working career up in the Pacific Northwest as a 911 dispatcher, and did that for a long time, and slow but sure worked my way up into court administration and was a court administrator up there, and did that for several years until I met Ron. And then basically I moved down to sunny Florida to be with him and didn't want to start at the bottom of the ladder again. So I was looking for something to do that would allow me to work more independently and hopefully from home. But I ended up getting my realtor's license followed by my broker's license and sold real estate in South Florida for several years. Just kind of burned out on it. It wasn't my niche. And I decided, okay, what was else? Something else I would enjoy doing. And I got my life and health insurance license, and I sold Medicare supplements to the senior population. Went and visited them in their homes and got to explain Medicare to them. I absolutely loved it. Loved sitting down and visiting with the seniors and also hearing all the old stories, because they desperately want to sit and visit. But I guess it was a good fit. But one day on my travels, I got a phone call from one of my girlfriends who, out of the blue, had said something about, have you and Ron ever thought of being travel agents? And it kind of blew me away because it hadn't been too much prior to that that Ron and I had been talking about us being empty nester baby boomers, and our health was good, and we were able to travel. It was prime time to start doing that. Did we want to travel? Where did we want to go? And so when she said something to me, it kind of blew me away. And I couldn't wait to get home and talk to Ron. And once home, we kind of checked online and did some research, weighed the pros and the cons and all that good stuff. And as it turned out, we decided to move forward. And as you probably figured that one out already, and we've probably done a whole lot more traveling than we would have done otherwise, but at the same time, we've helped a lot of other people to spread their travel dollars as far as they could and enjoy themselves. So it's been a win-win all the way around for us.
Excellent. Okay, good. And Ron, over to you.
Righty, thanks, Peter. Good to be here with you again. My background's very different from Pam's. I spent many, many years as a licensed clinical psychologist, very heavily involved in my own clinical practice, but also very involved in the self-administrative aspect of the profession. I was elected as chair of the Applied Division of the Canadian Psychological Association, so sat on the board of directors of that association, also sat on several ethics boards and professional affairs committees, represented the Canadian Association with its sister association here in the States, and really spent a lot of time giving back as well as learning an awful lot about the ins and outs of professional practice and seeing not only the good stuff but also some of the not so good stuff that was not unique to the profession of psychology. I think we see it in all the professions. You unfortunately got people who get involved and take advantage of what they can. So sitting in that role really opened my eyes quite a bit and also forced me to make very strong decisions about my own ethics and my own ethical practice, etc. In terms of clinical practice, I was very fortunate going through undergraduate and graduate training to have had a number of professors who very strongly made the point that if we were thinking at all of becoming, going into private practice, becoming private practitioners, it would be extremely important to, first of all, get as wide a basis as we could, wide a varied basis, working with different clinical populations, because when you go into private practice, you really have no control over who's going to call and make an appointment, why they're coming to see you, what their life situation is, where they need help, etc. And if you don't have a background of good clinical understanding, working with different clinical populations, different clinical situations, it's very easy to do more harm than good. And I was very fortunate that I had those professors and probably even more fortunate that I followed their advice because all through undergrad and grad training and after even graduating, I tried to make sure that I would get experience working with almost every one of the social service delivery systems. So I spent a number of years working in corrections, in alcohol and drug abuse, residential treatment center for adolescents, inpatient psychiatric facilities, outpatient community-based corrections, federal penitentiaries, et cetera, et cetera. And I really made a point of trying to get as broad a base as I could in clinical practice before going into my own private practice. When I did go into private practice, it didn't take me long to start specializing, working with young couples, young families, doing a lot of premarital therapy, a lot of sexual therapy, a lot of marriage counseling. Unfortunately, working with that population, it didn't take me very long to get involved in a number of cases where we had young couples going through divorce and fighting over custody and being immature enough and blind enough to see their kids as the last, you know, advantage that they could get against their about-to-be ex-spouse. And it was very coincidental that when I got involved working with that population, working in the whole area of divorce and custody disputes, there was some major changes taking place in the legal system. Up until that time, it had pretty much been a pre-drawn conclusion that if you had a young couple going through divorce and there were young children involved and there was a dispute over custody and or access, the courts, both in Canada and here in the States, were pretty much guaranteed in most cases to go custody to mommy, visitation for daddy. And in many cases, it worked out that that was the right thing to do. But we started seeing many too many cases where it was very clear that that was not only not a good way to go, but in several situations, it turned out to be very negative, very destructive. I was fortunate at the time to be working in Canada. And in Canada, the Divorce Act is a piece of federal legislation, which basically means that all divorces in Canada are handled at the Supreme Court level in each province. That brings a lot more regimentation, a lot more formality, a lot more consistency than we have here in the States. But it was also very, very good because they really were in a position to make decisions about process and just whole approaches that made a lot more sense. We had in Canada a very, very strong Supreme Court judiciary where the justices of the Supreme Court in each of the provinces have very, very close collegial relationships. They meet semi-annually, and they usually will come back, particularly from their summer conference in Banff, with some major decisions having been made about changes in procedure, changes in methods, etc. And to make a long story short, the time that I started getting very heavily involved in this, at that same time, when the justices came back from their summer conference in Banff, because of the negative cases that we were seeing with the predisposition to mommy gets custody, daddy gets access, the justices of the Supreme Court came back and said, going forward, any decision with respect to custody and or access had to be based on the psychological best interests of the children involved, and they basically put a dagger through the predisposition of mommy gets custody, daddy gets access. It was a very wise move, a very sound move. Initially, there were some bumps because obviously the justices didn't have a clear-cut way of determining the psychological best interest. They realized that they couldn't go on the basis of what they saw in the courtroom because you had two attorneys who each had the responsibility of representing their particular client and presenting their client's picture in the best possible way to the court. So the justices knew that they weren't getting an objective evaluation of what was going on there. And court personnel were not trained, did not have the experience or the interest in making that kind of determination. But it was very good because very quickly after the justices came back from Banff, then a number of practitioners, myself included, got together and said, you know, we've got a big challenge here. And it didn't take long before we saw two brand new subspecialties develop, one in the School of Clinical Social Work and one in the School of Clinical Psychology, where we had practitioners who were very interested and committed to following suit with the justice's new dictate. And I was very much a part of that group. We got together, determined some common ground of how to evaluate and determine the psychological best interests of the kids, and then also how to present that in court in a way that you know, the expert would go in as the court's witness, not as a hired gun for mommy's attorney or daddy's attorney. And as a result, I was one of the first psychologists in Canada to be appointed by the Supreme Court as an expert in child custody and access, and to present cases in the court where I did go in as the court's witness. Very, very challenging work, very, very rewarding work. I was also fortunate to be able to do a lot of guest lecturing at the Faculty of Law, talking to law students about the whole use of expert witnesses, how to prepare them, how to examine, how to cross-examine, what to look for in terms of their reports, etc. And I also did a lot of training at both social work and psychology conferences, talking to other practitioners who were interested in getting involved in that field. Well, as turned out, after I'd been doing that in Canada for a good number of years, I ended up in South Florida working with a psychiatrist who was doing a lot of criminal forensic work in the South Florida courts. He was, when I met him, he was very enthralled with what I was doing up in Canada. He said he was aware that there was a push to move in the same direction here in the States, but nothing had taken place yet in South Florida, and he saw an excellent opportunity for me to come down to South Florida and introduce the whole concept in the South Florida courts. It didn't take me long to decide that that was a good move for me to go from Western Canada and those winters to Southern Florida. And as a result, I ended up being the first psychologist to be appointed as an expert in child custody cases in both Dade and Broward County courts in South Florida. Anyhow, after Pam and I got together, and we were together for a while, we decided to semi-retire. We moved from southeast Florida over to southwest Florida, started raising alpacas. As you mentioned, Pam got involved in home-based business, multi-level marketing, and was a client of yours. And although I wasn't involved in that, I certainly supported her doing it. But when she came home and said we really needed to talk about looking at the possibility of becoming professional travel consultants, it was something that really grabbed me because we had been talking about doing more travel ourselves. We really both wanted to travel, had not been doing much travel, and we felt this was an excellent time to do it. And the opportunities that would be open to us as professional travel consultants just seemed overwhelming. We realized that if we were going to do it, we would do it the right way and get the licensing, get all the training, et cetera, and also spend enough time finding those travel vendors that we felt comfortable both representing and supporting. So it worked out very well. We did a lot more travel than we would have been able to had we not become travel agents. We helped an awful lot of people make the most of their travel time and their travel money. And everything was going great until COVID. COVID kind of brought a two-year screeching of the brakes, but we're pleased to be able to say that I think we're now very well founded on the road back to normalcy. And this week, a number of stories have come out that really show the broad base of travel, and in particular cruising, coming back and coming back much stronger even than it was before. So after the break, we've got a lot of things to talk about.
Excellent. Okay, good. We're going to be right back. If you want, take a look at harshmantravel.com, and we'll be right back after this commercial break.
You've been listening to the Harshman Travel Radio Show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle. This special segment can be heard again with almost any device connected to the Internet by going to buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Listen in often and get to know Pam and Ron. Go to the buildingfortunesradio.com website to listen in to the show. No matter where you're at in life, you can benefit by listening to and by working with Pam and Ron. Let them book your next cruise, vacation getaway, or group event. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio and witness their ability to pursue their dreams in the field they love. Thanks for listening. And now, back to the Harshman Travel Radio Show.
And we are back, Pam and Ron Harshman. Ron's going to cover the new stuff that's happening in the industry. And Ron, you can take as much time as you want and take as much time as you want. So here we go.
All righty. Thanks, Peter. First of all, Ponant is a small ship cruise line. They basically do excursion-type cruises, and they came out with an announcement this week that really, I think, is indicative of where the industry is heading. It's very consistent with what you and I have been talking about for the past year and a half, Peter, in terms of what would make sense dealing with COVID as opposed to the politically-based decisions that were cast upon the industry by primarily the U.S. CDC, but also worldwide. And just to kind of give an overview of what they said, they basically announced that they were relaxing all of their anti-COVID measures, that they will no longer require guests to present proof of a negative COVID-19 test before embarking. There were three situations that they were looking for. Either passengers could have a complete vaccination scheme that includes at least three doses of a mRNA vaccine. That was one. Also, they would allow two vaccination doses, provided that the second was given within 9 months of the date of embarkation, and proof of past infection could count as one of those doses. And the third, which I really think is the way that most are going to end up going, is either a vaccination dose or proof of past infection of more than 2 weeks and within a maximum of 4 months of time of boarding. Tests will only be mandatory if required by local authorities. Obviously, the cruise lines cannot override local governments. And guests will have the opportunity to take tests on board. In terms of masks, no longer mandatory, even though they are highly recommended on board and ashore. The requirements, again, will bend to local authorities. And, of course, all of their crew members, when they're in contact with guests, will be wearing masks. The nice part of their announcement, though, was in the event of a COVID case being detected on board, quarantine measures may be reduced depending on the diagnosis from the ship's doctor regarding the risk of infection. Those diagnoses being low risk no longer automatically required to isolate, and they will be able to take part in activities. Ponant and the ship's captain may need to reintroduce more extensive measures with regards to tests, masks, and mask wearing and quarantine, and in all cases, they will increase its measures to the level required by countries visited and by the local government requirements. But I felt good reading that because it really, as I said earlier, underlines the movement away from the political ideology-based decisions to medical science type of decisions. And I felt very much that it was in keeping with our expectations that we've talked about for, what, the past year and a half, Peter. And it's nice to see that we were very much on track and things are unfolding the way we expected. One of the other things that came out, a number of cruise lines have come out with announcements this past week that really indicate the way in which cruising is coming back bigger and stronger than ever. One of the things I've talked about often on this radio show is the feeling that I have when I look at the cruise industry's response to local situations and, you know, dangerous situations or heavy-duty weather restrictions, etc., you know, the reactions that we had from cruise lines when there were heavy storms that wiped out ports of call, and the cruise lines would send a ship or two ships to house people and all that kind of thing. Holland America had a ship that for the past 6 months has been in Rotterdam in the Netherlands, that's what I'm talking about. But they had a ship there that was housing families from the Ukraine who had fled to the Netherlands. The Netherlands had made a decision to make available for many thousands of people leaving Ukraine, and the Holland America ship was there, and it took families and housed them, and just this past week, it ended the six-month commitment to be there. And the charter was funded by the government, part of the Netherlands' largest commitment to accommodate up to 50,000 Ukrainians. Salvation Army was involved, and they really went overboard. They brought on a number of crew members who spoke Ukrainian. They did things for the kids, etc. And this was just one of the major community-based contributions from the cruise industry, and I think it really speaks highly of the mentality that we've seen throughout that industry. Another announcement this week from Norwegian Cruise Lines, they've announced that they have become the newest member of the Methanol Institute. This is a group of companies and entities that are committed to go with diesel and methanol, trying to get to zero net greenhouse gas emissions by the year 2050 through carbon, etc. And it was interesting to see Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings, which is the three different cruise lines, moving in a direction that, again, has them at the forefront of things that I think the entire industry will be following. But Norwegian made the commitment that they will be working on and sharing their learnings, their findings, with the feasibility assessment of retrofitting existing engines to be able to operate with dual fuels, diesel and methanol, and they have made the commitment by 2050 to be reducing carbon to zero. Holland America is also in the news, and this is one of the expansion things that I was talking about. They've announced that they are bringing back their Grand Australia and New Zealand voyage in 2024 for the first time in more than 10 years. There's going to be a 94-day sailing aboard the Volendam, scheduled to depart January 3rd, 2024, round trip from San Diego, California. I announced a couple of weeks ago that Holland America was going to be adding and made the commitment to add longer voyages departing from North America home ports, and this is just one of the ones that that they are doing. So it's been more than 10 years. Going out of San Diego is going to allow good access for, obviously, for North American people who want to go. Australia continues to be a sought-after cruising destination, and the grand voyage that they are looking at will be visiting South Pacific, New Zealand, and the Great Barrier Reef. So the 2024 Grand Australia and New Zealand voyage, people want to mark on their calendar if this is of interest to you. This will include 43 ports of call, four overnight stays in Perth, Sydney, Auckland, and Papeete, 2 days of scenic cruising in the Grand Barrier Reef, explorations of the Riven Reef and far north regions, a stop at Komodo Island, as well as cruising through the Torres Strait and Milford Sound. The company is also offering two shorter segments of sailing, 58 days from San Diego to Sydney and 36 days from Sydney to San Diego. Amma Waterways, Pam and my favorite river boat cruise line, has unveiled its longest ever river sailing aboard the Anamora for 2024, seven river journeys, spring and summer editions, and they will be going through the entire Rhine and Danube rivers, as well as the Danube Delta leading to the Black Sea. Since the debut of the Seven River Journeys in 2021, we have received tremendous demand from travelers who are seeking to spend extra time immersing themselves in beautiful destinations throughout Europe. People who are booking for the 2024, they say, will be treated to a variety of experiences while learning about the region's unique history, as well as cultural and culinary traditions. There's a Seven River Journey Spring 2024, sailing April 22nd, 2024 from Amsterdam, Netherlands, ending June 10th in Romania, and they will be calling on 15 European countries. The Summer Edition, June 10th, 2024, going from Romania, ends in Amsterdam, and they will be sailing the length of the Danube before entering the main Danube Canal, continuing on to the Rhine, Main, and Moselle rivers, as well as the Scheldt, Maas, and Waal waterways in the Netherlands and Belgium. So if people think cruising is simply going to the Bahamas or going to the Caribbean, these cruise lines are saying, hey, wake up, there's a whole world out there. In concert with this, the Port of San Diego is announcing that their new cruise season, starting now, is the busiest since 2010. 140 cruises are scheduled, up 45% from last year. All sailings are at or near full capacity, bringing approximately 460,000 passengers to the Port of San Diego. So we're seeing throughout these changes that are taking place, and as I was saying over and over again, probably trying to convince myself as well as everybody else that cruises were coming back, I feel very much that this is justifying my faith in the industry, because every announcement that's coming out right now is an announcement saying we're not only back, but we're back bigger and better than ever before. Oceania Cruises, one of the North or one of the Norwegian cruise lines, has unveiled its most extensive series of world and grand voyages for 2025. They have reintroduced the popular Around the World in 180 Days voyage. They have seven grand voyages ranging in length from 50 to 111 days. So again, those people who've been thinking cruising, oh, that's a weekend hop on a boat, or maybe a week, maybe even 2 weeks, this is really saying there's so much more out there if you're able to take advantage of it. And if you're interested in taking advantage of it, the cruise lines are certainly very much committed to making the ocean better than it was when they got there, making the world smaller than people sometimes think of it, and giving people an opportunity to really expand their own part of the world. And it doesn't have to be, I mean, this is the beauty of cruising. It doesn't have to be that you either do nothing or you do one of these, you know, $100,000 cruises. There's so much in between, and there's so much that people can plan for and set a goal, whether it's, you know, to celebrate a major anniversary, a retirement, or whatever. The cruise lines are bending over backwards right now, coming up with different sales. It's one sale after the other after the other. And now that vaccines are no longer mandatory, now that we're moving in a much saner approach to COVID, we are certainly experiencing a major, major increase in bookings and in inquiries. So anybody listening who has any interest in even exploring what's out there, what might I enjoy, what are the good deals that are available, how much does it cost, do I have to pay everything up front right now? The cruise lines are running. I just booked a family of five today for a short cruise. Deposits were at 50% on the sale that ended today. And they, the family of five has four people in one stateroom because number three and number four go free, and the fifth person in their own stateroom, that's the oldest daughter. And there are just so many opportunities, and Pam and I are very, very excited about the return to normalcy. As we've said before, we've already booked a number of cruises for ourselves, and we are working on a number of group offerings right into 2025. So thank you, Peter. We'll see you again next week.
Great information. So check them out. Go back to harshmantravel.com and make sure you contact Ron and Pam, and they'll walk you through all these different things. Lots of stuff. Man, there's a lot of stuff going on. And I'm glad we've made the turn. So we're going to catch everybody next week on Building Fortunes Radio. Thanks, everyone.
Have a good week.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Harshman Travel Radio Show segment on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear previous radio shows with Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle. Pam and Ron's success as entrepreneurs has allowed them to pursue their passion in the travel industry. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio Show and learn about Pam and Ron as they discover the joy that comes from being part of the travel industry. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingles and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.